Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be having a fascinating conversation with Dr. Ed Stetzer. He's Director of Research with Lifeway Christian Resources of the Southern Baptist Convention. We're going to be looking at some interesting news coverage on America's largest evangelical denomination, raising the question about whether or not there is a decline in membership and what this means, and looking to the future of the Southern Baptist Convention in terms of generational change. Whether you're a Southern Baptist, an evangelical, or a member of another denomination, you're going to be very interested, I think, in this conversation about how exactly we should conceive this generational challenge we are facing. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We're looking at the world from a biblical and evangelical worldview, asking the questions of what these things mean, and we'll be getting to that conversation with Dr. Ed Stetzer in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news. The advent of same-sex marriage in California is now just hours away, as county clerks in most of the counties of California are prepared to start issuing same-sex marriage licenses on the 17th of June, some as early as 5:01 p.m. on June the 15th. In particular, in the area of San Francisco, the officials there intend to get ahead of the rest of the state, and it is estimated as many as 500 same-sex marriages may be performed every single day for the foreseeable future in San Francisco. It'll be interesting to see if that does come to pass, but without doubt, this represents a major change not only for California, but for the rest of the nation because of the influence and precedent value of California. The San Francisco Chronicle is out with a very interesting story. We're going to be talking later about generational change in American church life. It's interesting that generational change in the culture is also very apparent. Mark Mortford, writing for the San Francisco Chronicle, indicates that support for same-sex marriage is, as we have been learning in recent months, much greater as you go younger in the demographic, younger in the population. Let me just read to you from his article, the San Francisco Chronicle. No surprise there. He writes, "It's a generational thing, you could say, grinning just a little as you do so. It's because younger people today, those younger than, say, 45 or so, have been far more exposed to more fluid notions of gender and sexuality, to the idea of homosexuality as a common, non-threatening, what's-the-big-deal shrug, and therefore, we understand that allowing gay people to wed doesn't mean our shaky notions of God and family and society will collapse." He's pointing to a recent poll of Californians that indicated that for the first time in history, a bare majority, a very slim majority of those polled said that they supported the idea of same-sex marriage. Now, it's interesting, I have to insert here that very same day, two different polls came out, one indicating that a narrow majority of Californians oppose same-sex marriage, the other, a narrow majority of Californians would support gay marriage. It probably depends upon the margin of error in both of those polls, but without doubt, if you look at it over time, support for same-sex marriage has been growing. You might say that opposition to same-sex marriage has been decreasing. And one of the interesting realities of all of this is that the younger demographic is at least a large part of the explanation. Mark Mortford writes about what he calls the tipping point, Malcolm Gladwell's cultural analysis, indicating that a specific point is reached in which the question shifts from why not to why. And that is exactly what's going on here, from why to why not. The tipping point, he says, has finally been reached, and there's no going back. Same-sex marriage as an issue, as a hot button, as a nasty right-wing political weapon will soon vanish into the dustbin of history. Now, what I want you to hear from that is not the shocking analysis about the generational change, but rather what Mark Mortford, writing in the San Francisco Chronicle, really means to get at, which is that this kind of moral change will soon be so complete that those who oppose same-sex marriage will be considered much like racists would be considered, or people that have an insane, irrational prejudice against people for no basic and sensical reason. And that's exactly where the culture is headed on this. Those who believe that there is a biblical norm for sexuality and that there's a biblical definition of marriage, and by the way, it's beyond the Bible, considering common grace. The institution of marriage has been privileged and recognized throughout virtually every human history, every civilization through human history. You start looking at this and you realize that you see the agenda very much at play here. And this is where the generational analysis, I think, becomes very, very clear, and that is that the argument that this is just prejudice finds its greatest attractiveness among a generation that has been raised to assume that all great questions are questions of prejudice rather than questions of truth, questions of sensitivity rather than questions of principle, It's not to say young people have no concern for truth and no concern for principle. It is to say that they have been inculcated in a generation in which their educational process, the cultural norms, the entertainment they've been watching has been suggesting that most of these issues, whether it's a scruple against homosexuality or against virtually anything, teenage premarital sex or whatever, something that you can learn to get over. That's exactly what Mark Morford is arguing here. And the Bible speaks to that, by the way. That is one of the central messages of Romans chapter 1, that's what happens when people begin to deny the conscience. They eventually get over it. The conscience no longer even operates as it was intended. By the time you go from Romans 1 to Romans 2, you have not only God giving them over, which is a word of judgment against all humanity in terms of our power of rationalization about sin. And then in Romans chapter 2, Paul comes right back to say, look, the human conscience, corrupted by the fall, no longer is even trustworthy. Jiminy Cricket isn't right. Don't let your conscience be your guide. Because in this fallen world, the conscience can be trained to love the wrong things and to hate the wrong things. We are born rationalizers. Anyone who's been a parent understands that. The moment the child reaches a certain age and he or she is caught in a misdeed, the rationalization starts. Meanwhile, on the front of same-sex marriage, and this is such a hot issue precisely because of what is about to begin just hours from now in California, gay couples in many other states, in particular USA Today reports from New York, are going to be traveling to California in order to get married because, as you may be aware, the governor of New York has declared that his state will recognize same-sex marriages performed elsewhere, even though same-sex marriages themselves are not legal in the state of New York. That's why, just remember, the precedent-setting value of a state like California is huge. Not only does it represent about a third of the American population, it's where the entertainment industry is primarily located. It's where so many who are creating the symbols and the laugh lines, the dialogue, the scripts, the narratives of this culture, they live in California, so many of them. And you have their influence throughout the media and throughout movies and literature and all the rest. And then, of course, you do have the fact that the California Supreme Court is the most often cited state Supreme Court in this country by other state courts in looking for precedents. Another interesting analysis is out also from USA Today. Has to do with an article by Sharon Jason dealing with teenage virginity pledges. The lead is this: virginity pledges do deter some teens from having sex, according to a study by the RAND Corporation that surveyed teen virgins over 3 years to see whether they stayed that way. Of 1,517 adolescents aged 12 to 17 in 2001, when the research began, teenagers who vowed to remain virgins until they were married were less likely to be sexually active than others who didn't make a pledge. Now, I have to insert here just a little word of common sense. You have to wonder if this is really worth a headline and a lead like that in the national media. You would think that even just a tiny bit of common sense would indicate that people who don't intend to have sex have less sex than those who do. So, in one sense, this is sort of like discovering that water is wet. But USA Today does lead with this. Headline news. It goes on and says about one quarter of the adolescents surveyed made a promise to wait until marriage to have sex. 34 had broken it. 34% had broken it by 2004, compared with 42% who'd had sex who didn't make the pledge. Now, I want to come back and say, here is what I think the mainstream media is missing. They are complicit in the sexualization of the culture, even in the way they assume what normal is. If you look at this news story, it is clear that the assumption is that teenagers having sex is normal. Teenagers being committed to abstinence until marriage are abnormal. It's almost as if some teenagers decide to be abnormal and can make it. Others decide to be abnormal and can't. I want to tell you, they're onto something by accident. This generation of adolescents raised in Christian homes is being surrounded by a peer culture that assumes that not having sex until you're married is just dumb, weird, out of step, useless, eccentric to the point not even of being interesting anymore. That's why you can't just tell people, Christian young people in particular, love Jesus and don't have sex until you're married. They've got to be grounded in much more biblical truth. They have to be discipled. They're going to have to love the Lord so much that they would not want what their bodies tell them to want, in that they would wish instead to please the Lord and to obey God's word in such a way that they see it as part of a bigger picture. If it's just about sex, just say no won't work. It has to be about a much bigger picture of pleasing God in every area of life, of knowing enough biblical truth to have the resources in the heart to do what is right. And it's also about the importance, I would say, to Christian parents of surrounding your young people in a peer culture which understands, yes, we are now, in terms of Our expectation of sex reserved in marriage, we are a moral minority. We're a cognitive moral minority in a world in which all the entertainment, so many of the celebrities and all the rest, are saying otherwise. Not only that, the educators, the social scientists, even the American Academy of Pediatrics. We as Christians really are, in this sense, forced to go back to first principles, which is to say, if we're going to be faithful to Jesus Christ, people are going to think us odd. You've got to ground people in enough biblical truth that they're willing to be considered by their peers odd, out of step. Being in step with this culture is, it's just too high a price to pay, but it's the default without those defenses. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll be back for a fascinating conversation, not only about the Southern Baptist Convention, but about denominational life across the lines. Looking at generational change, my guest is going to be Dr. Ed Stetzer. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
The operational observation in almost any church or denomination is that we are now on the precipice of a rather massive process of generational change. All you have to do is look at the statistics, church by church, denomination by denomination. History tells us that there are certain moments when a generational shift takes place, and all of a sudden there are new faces at the table. There are new influences being brought to the conversation, new questions being asked. That's certainly happening right now in the Southern Baptist Convention. Let me just tell you that as we step back yesterday on the floor of the Southern Baptist Convention, the denomination adopted a resolution that had to do with regenerate church membership and integrity in terms of denominational statistics. It was very, very interesting. It's the kind of conversation that in many ways emerges from the data now coming in, where all of a sudden, Southern Baptists are beginning to say, hey, we really better be paying attention to what these numbers tell us. For a long time, we've been telling ourselves we're the nation's largest evangelical denomination, the largest non-Protestant denomination, and now there are some statistics that are all of a sudden coming to our attention that are requiring us to rethink some questions about who we are and how we need to address the great challenge of this denomination going into the future. You may be a part of another evangelical denomination, but for your church and your denomination, it's likely that the issues are very much the same. Among evangelicals, there is the recognition that this process of generational change is happening. It's happening suddenly. And let's face it, this generation has had to live a different Christian experience in terms of how they perceive the culture, their peers, so many of their own experiences on the college and university campus than previous generations. We're looking at the national level at people talking about the distinctions between the GI generation and then the baby boomers, Generation X, Generation Y, the millennials, and all the rest. But the future is here. And the most influential demographic right now in American consumer life, American marketing, is the 14 to 24-year-olds. Right now, the most dominant generation in terms of where those who are producing entertainment are directing their attention is toward virtually the same age range. And right now, if in your church you look out and you don't see many 14 to 24-year-olds, you're not looking out and seeing much of a future. My guest today is Ed Stetzer, Director of Research with Lifeway Christian Resources of the Southern Baptist Convention. Ed, you've been looking at this kind of material for a very long time. The Washington Post had two articles over the weekend suggesting that Southern Baptists are facing some big questions related to the numbers, related to the future, related to this process of generational change. Anything to this?
Well, I think that probably the news that was shocking was, for many people, that the Southern Baptist Convention experienced a year of decline. And a year is not a trend, but it was a year of decline. And much of the celebration in Southern Baptist life has been that, you know, we are not declining. We are growing each year, even though the membership statistic was, I mean, we tend to be suspicious of it. You know, the joke around the convention is there's 16.2 million members. The FBI can't find 5 million of them on a given Sunday. We've all heard that. But I think it's a dubious milestone that the Southern Baptist Convention, which has been growing in membership for decades, there was a slight decline in 98 that some have said is more of a reporting change, and there's some reason for that to be in the case. But here we have for decades a trajectory of growth that now that has slowed. The growth rate has slowed down each year for the last several, and finally a tip into decline. So I think there's some merit in the fact that Southern Baptist Convention churches declined. The Southern Baptist Convention declined last year. Now, if we look at the trends, this has been a trend line. The decline in the growth rate has been a trend line for 50 years. And so if that trend line continues, and we don't know it will, we don't want it to, but if it continues, over the next 10 years, we'll see more years of decline than we see of growth in membership.
You know, I've been involved in so many research projects related to American denominational life. I represented our denomination in a multi-year study funded by a major endowment involving people from very many different denominations on college and university and seminary campuses. And, you know, Ed, a part of our problem here is that these numbers don't tell us a great deal. Now, they might point to a great deal, but they don't necessarily tell us a great deal. Let me point out something. For instance, there's a theological dynamic going on here, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. There is an argument which I believe with all my heart, which is that liberal theology leads to decline and death. I believe that not only by theological intuition, but by documentation looking at what happens to liberal denominations.
We saw that recently with the yearbook, the annual yearbook came out. The more liberal you were, the faster you were declining.
That's right. But you put it exactly the right way, the faster you are declining.
Right.
Because the reality is that on the evangelical side, there's some decline there too. I want to come back and say, you know, there are a lot of things factored into this. For instance, you take the mainline Protestant denominations, they started to decline, and one of the reasons they started to decline had to do with the fact they were having fewer babies.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you're looking at the demographic issues, if your average family had four children in the 50s and then had two children in the 80s, you cut your attendance in terms of children and youth in half, and it wasn't, at that point, a theological decision.
Sure, and some of the articles we've seen have pointed that this is really a demographic issue, but I would probably be a pause to say that fully, but I agree that's going to be part of it.
Yeah, you have to look at the fact that there is a theological issue here, and as much as the national press is trying to more or less dissuade us from that,
right.
I've seen enough of the data, I'm absolutely convinced of it. But I guess what I want to say is that evangelicals better not believe we're just going to grow because we're evangelicals.
Right. No question. Here, we today are only on the only continent in the world where the church is not growing when Eastern and Western Europe are combined together. We need to recognize that the patterns, and there are some demographic patterns that are there, but there are also some evangelical denominations that are growing in similar demographic contexts. Mm-hmm. And so I think I hope this is a wake-up call. Now, the press, you know, the media, they've been using these stats, you know, they've been beating on Southern Baptist this week like a low-hanging pinata on Cinco de Mayo. I get that. But the reality is we've got to ask the question, is there something here we need to learn? And as
Absolutely.
I've looked around this convention this week, I'm hearing Southern Baptists seeing this as a wake-up call, and I'm encouraged by that.
And I think the generational change issue is one of the main issues that we've got to talk about there. But there are other issues out there as well. I want to deal with the theological issues for a bit here because I think this is where I'm afraid that many are going to miss the point. And that is not that, look, evangelical denominations decline just as fast as liberal denominations, so theology doesn't matter. The numbers don't say that.
No, not at all. They're not even close to that. Anyone who wants to make a case that because Southern Baptists declined by 40,000 people last year, that therefore they're declining at the same rate as the Episcopal Church or the other mainline denominations that are literally hemorrhaging at rates that are unimaginable. We have a dubious milestone. They're hemorrhaging in near death, and there's a distinct difference between the two. Now, we need to be careful. I've heard some Baghdad Bobs running around saying, no, everything's fine, you know, everything's going great. I think we need to be careful. We need to hear this and say the gospel is important enough for us to look at what we need to learn and to change and how we need to be, do, and tell the gospel differently.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest changes that certainly should be on our radar screen here, certainly should be very much of our concern, is the fact that when you're looking at the evangelization of our own young people, we are not doing anything close to what we were doing 30 years ago.
No question. LifewayResearch.com, they can download the study you've talked about in the program where we saw the 70% dropout rate for people who attended church regularly for at least a year in high school, drop out for at least a year.
Now, I want to tie that back to what I talked about at the beginning of the program with the news story in USA Today on virginity pledges.
Yes.
You know, you start looking at that and you realize that, wow, we're really going to have to ground our young people in far more than just love Jesus and don't have sex till you're married for them to make it.
That's right.
But it turns out it's not just about virginity pledges. It's going to be about authentic discipleship I'm going to argue those two are tied together.
Yeah, one of the things in the USA Today story that came out on this is I said in there that, you know, too many youth groups are holding tanks with pizza. There's no life change and transformation going on. They want a faith that changes them and that then changes the world.
You know, for a long time, many evangelical denominations in general, and I want to say the Southern Baptist Convention in particular, we were pretty certain that we were going to grow just because we're us.
Right.
You know, and the reality is that we face a brand new missiological and evangelistic challenge. We face a big challenge in terms of aiming our churches in so many different demographic locations and cultural settings towards a bold future.
Amen.
And I think this generation's up to it.
Me too.
It's not going to happen just by default. Back to continue this discussion with Ed Stetzer. Dr. Stetzer is Director of Research at Lifeway Christian Resources of the Southern Baptist Convention. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We have as our guest today Dr. Ed Stetzer, Director of Research with Lifeway Christian Resources of the Southern Baptist Convention. We're broadcasting from the floor of the convention in Indianapolis, Indiana, here in the exhibition hall. Lots of folks who are walking around doing the kinds of things people do at conventions. And one of the things people do at conventions is talk. And a lot of the talk has been about some of the data that has been released about the Southern Baptist Convention, treated in the press. And there are a host of other issues being discussed as well. It's good to have Dr. Stetzer as my guest. You know, what we began by looking at a few moments ago is the fact that Southern Baptists are having this discussion because we are the nation's largest non-Catholic denomination. We are the largest evangelical denomination. And for a long time, the Southern Baptist Convention has been able to point to a virtually unbroken growth pattern. And now it looks like there's something broken in the growth pattern. Now, when you're looking at statistics, 1 year doesn't necessarily tell you anything.
That's right.
But it does, in this sense, set off something of an alarm bell. We talked about what that might mean and what that doesn't mean. And we ended the last segment by saying that one very important issue out of this is that it reminds us that we face a new challenge generationally in terms of reaching our own young people. That's true, I would argue, for evangelical denominations and churches across the board, and also a new cultural setting. In what we might define very well as a post-Christian America, with a very different set of cultural assumptions around us. I want to turn to Ed Stetzer now and move from those statistics to say, as you are the director of research for Lifeway, which is the publishing arm of the Southern Baptist Convention, you have a national ministry, national perspective. What are the statistics and the statistical questions that really keep you up late at night?
You know, I think the membership thing is a fascinating thing that the press will want to talk about, and it's symbolic. But I think it's symbolic. You know, we're not, you know, we're Baptists, you and I, we didn't name our denomination the Southern Membership Convention. It's a Southern Baptist Convention. We care about baptism because baptisms are reflective of conversions. We're Credo Baptist, believers are baptized, and I think for me, what keeps me up at night is less a one-year change in membership, though that too reflects a 50-year trend. But what concerns me is that 7 out of the last 8 years, we have seen a decline in baptisms, and I'm concerned that, you know, as Credo Baptists, those are baptized believers, that every category of baptism is trending down except those under 5 years of age. That's the only growing category. That deeply concerns me.
Well, the fact that we're baptizing children 5 and under deeply concerns me, given our convictions about believers' baptism. But let's go to the bigger issue just in terms of the decline in baptisms.
Yes.
Let's make very clear what that means. That means, in our Baptist way of understanding it, that's a decline in evangelism.
Right. There's not conversions taking place. I mean, again, now to be fair, there was a study done by the Home Mission Board in the 1990s, long before I was there doing the research there, that looked at adult conversions and found that of adult conversions, only 40% of the baptisms reported were actually a result of a conversion. 20% said they were already baptized in a Southern Baptist church, by immersion as a non-child or maybe as a younger child. 40% were Methodists or Episcopalians. And I rejoice when people get their baptism on the right side of their conversion. But in that case, only 40% said it was a direct result of a recent conversion. So again, we are talking about conversions, and it ought to break our hearts that great, membership declines, baptisms down. Those are people who need Jesus. And we are less effective today, I believe, in proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ than we have been in historical periods in the past.
And I have to tell you, Ed, one of my big concerns is not just looking at the statistics in terms of relative growth or decline year by year, but you really have to put that against the bigger backdrop picture of the demographic changes in the U.S., the growth of the American population. We're
right.
Falling behind faster when you look at that.
That's right. If we're baptizing about the same people from 1950 to about now, with the exception of 4 years in the 70s during the Jesus movement, we saw a bit of an increase that's there. But other than that, mostly a plateau. The population of the United States has almost tripled during that time. And so that tells us, we can say we're baptizing similar numbers, But as a percentage of the population, we are not just losing ground, we are rapidly losing ground.
Now, when we're rapidly losing ground, where are we losing ground fastest?
You mean demographically?
Yeah.
Well, we're finding many areas that look at it from among young adults. Now, I don't know that we can say definitively that this is the area we're not reaching, but books like Unchristian, I have a new book coming out in the fall called Lost and Found, The Younger Unchurched and Churches That Reach Them, we see an increasing skepticism. We've compared the attitudes of the younger unchurched versus the older unchurched and see both an openness to spirituality, but an increasing skepticism towards the things of the church, and that concerns me greatly.
Yeah, I'm going to come back and make an argument, and I'll just kind of front-load the argument here, Ed. I'm going to come back after this break and make the argument that one of the challenges we face is that our churches have had the luxury of ministering and evangelizing in a largely churched culture, where our neighbors pretty much know what we're talking about, at least in general. We're now in a very different age, a post-Christian age, and I believe the resources needed for evangelism and convictional ministry in that age are altogether different, much deeper and more substantive than what a lot of people, a lot of Christians, assume right now. This is a place for intelligent Christian conversation. Back with more on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
If you go to my website at albertmueller.com, you'll find a lot of articles dealing with American church and denominational life, dealing especially with what's going on among those denominations that are most severely in decline. And the issue there is that evidence is abundant. You can just look at the evidence and you can see why. I can almost make you this absolute pledge. You find a denomination that's arguing over same-sex marriage, they're not going to be looking at denominational growth. You look at the embrace of liberal theology, liberal morality, liberal practices, and as a study entitled Vanishing Boundaries from the 1990s demonstrated, when you don't have a clear distinction between the church and the world, no one needs to go to church anymore. And these liberal denominations, and by the way, the most important thing that study demonstrated is that if you do not believe your neighbors are going to hell without Christ, you won't speak to them about the gospel. There will be no urgency. So even as I have written so much about that, as a matter of my own integrity and intellectual honesty, when a report like this comes out about my own denomination, I've got to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I've got to talk about it honestly. And I've got to say, look, this is a wake-up call. It's not the same pattern. My guest today is one who really has the opportunity to speak about this in a very, very clear way. Ed Stetzer, Director of Research at Lifeway Christian Resources of the Southern Baptist Convention. You know, Ed, I do think as much as you, as well as I, have looked at these statistics, it is a little different when you're talking about your own church, your own denomination.
It is. It's very easy to point and say, well, these folks are declining because they're doing this. I think here it becomes more personal. It's a hard issue. All right, are we declining? Yes, at least for a year, but trends point for more years in the future. So then what are the solutions? And that's where the challenge becomes. I think there's a consensus that very quickly has formed at this year's Southern Baptist Convention that we're at a point where we need to make some substantive change. But what are those changes? And there are a lot of voices calling for different kinds of change, and I wouldn't be – I think it's naive to think, well, if we change this one thing, that right. fixes it all.
Well, I think we have to recognize that our challenge has really changed. Let me speak just anecdotally here. I have a book coming out in just a few weeks entitled Atheism Remix.
Yes.
It's a Christian response to the new atheism. I had a youth minister on the floor of this convention tell me earlier today that as he deals with the youth of his church, he said several of them are surrounded in the public schools by even a majority of kids who say they're atheists. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just point out something. I don't believe they're really atheists.
Right, sure.
Not only do I believe there are no atheists in foxholes, I believe what the Bible says there are no real atheists. But there are people who think they are, mm-hmm. and then people are going to make atheist arguments. But you know, Ed, if I think about junior high and high school students claiming to be atheists, here's what it tells me. They think it's cool.
Yeah.
It's a label. It's a fashion they can put on because they think it's cool.
Yeah.
Now, but that's what's changed. When I was in high school, atheists were a weird fringe.
Right.
Now, it seems cool. You
right.
know, we've got to wake up and face the fact that our teenagers, our young people, our young adults are in a world in which being a convictional disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ isn't considered cool.
That's right. And I would say that's one of the streams is atheism, and it's in its ascendancy. And who would have guessed? I think if you looked at the after the Carl Sagan era, you begin to see the decline of atheism. And I think you see that resurgent atheism, you also see a resurgent spirituality. I call it the Oprahization of American spirituality. There's a spiritual interest that's there that's that strong. And so I think in the midst of this, one of the things we have to recognize is we are no longer having a home field advantage. And I think that requires us to think more and more like missionaries, think in missiological ways. Missional is a term I use to describe that, is for us to think, how can we engage our culture with a biblically faithful and changing gospel, but in a changing cultural context that needs good news communicated? Now, we have to be careful. Some say, well, we got to make the Bible relevant and God relevant. I would be careful with that. I think God's relevant, Bible's relevant in this and every culture. But I think we've got to help people understand that, and they are increasingly distant from church culture in prevailing culture, and that takes more work than it did even 20 years ago.
I think intellectual honesty and gospel urgency requires we look at the world and see that the challenge has changed.
Agreed.
And especially it has changed generationally.
Yes.
If you are in your 70s, you don't have to deal with it
way
someone who's 17 does.
That's right.
But that person who's 17 has got to deal with it for the rest of her life.
That's right.
That's just the way it is.
And I will tell you, here part of the challenge is our churches, being older, most of our churches are older, our churches are often raised in an era when that's not an issue, and now they're saying, why should we have to think, do, and act things and do things differently in this era? And they need to do it for their kids and for their grandkids, you know, and that's part of the challenge.
Absolutely. But I got to tell you, I've got
tell
a concern
me.
On the other side of this.
Tell me.
And that is the Kinnaman book, you know, Unchristian
sure,
and all the rest.
Yes.
You know, the data's there saying, look, it's uncool to say that homosexuality is a sin. It's uncool to believe that same-sex marriage is wrong. It may be uncool, but it's deeply biblical.
It
I
is.
Mean, somehow, we've got to make the church understand, our churches understand, that we can offend for all the wrong reasons. And sometimes we do. We
yes.
can send weirdo cultural signals.
Right. Right.
We can major on minors and
right.
minor on majors. And we can make all kinds of mistakes. But the reality is, there's an offensiveness to the gospel that's just built in. That's 1 Corinthians 1. That's what Paul said.
And I would agree wholeheartedly.
About the foolishness of the cross.
There's always going to be a stumbling block of the cross. But I think we need to be honest amongst ourselves. And I think I hear around here people being increasingly honest that there is a stumbling block of the cross. But too many people are tripping on the stumbling block of the church on the way. And the church needs to make sure that it's known, it's compelled by love. That's a new book I just wrote with Philip Nation. They need to be compelled by love, and they need to be showing and sharing the good news of the gospel in the kingdom. And I think the challenge is we're not known for that. We did a study that ended up getting picked up on CNN, all the places, and one of the things we asked was, agree or disagree with this statement, Christians get on my nerves. 48% of the unchurched would say in a poll, Christians get on my nerves. 48% would not say Jews get on my nerves or Muslims get on my nerves. There's something that we need to consider. Yes, part of why we are unpopular and will be increasingly unpopular as the trajectory on homosexuality continues on its path is because we stand for moral issues. Part of it is we need to learn to show more clearly the love of Christ. Our ministry is not to be angry. Our ministry is to weep. The lost are not our enemy. They're prisoners of war, and we've got to remember that.
That's well said. I have so many different thoughts that run out of that, however, and that includes the fact that a part of the reason why Christians are so easily identified as those that get on your nerves is because we are so much more numerous, and because when you are recognized as being dominant in a culture,
no question.
You get a lot of the blame for what happens.
No but, question, but I know, think you have to say that our perception, I think you and I both agree our perceptions, we've got some issues to deal with. But simultaneously, some of those issues are us. Not all of those issues, but some of those issues
well,
are us.
No doubt. I conceded that point before we even began. The difficulty is, I think, we've got to have some time and some maturity to start to think these things through.
I agree.
To do a biblical and theological check, and to make sure we're doing it for the right reason. Because I want to end this discussion by saying, the last thing we really need to be worried about are the numbers in this denomination. What we need to be worried about are individual human lives.
Every number's a
where
story.
Heaven and hell is hanging
That's
in the
right.
balance.
That's right.
The numbers will take care of themselves. If our churches are healthy,
yeah.
if they're evangelistic and preaching the gospel, if they're preaching the word, reaching out in their communities, if they love those who are living around them and they love the peoples of the world, if they want to see the name of Christ proclaimed among the nations and made great, they want to see Christ made famous, everything else is going to take care of itself. If they don't get there by conviction, whatever they do won't matter.
That's right.
It's Esther, thanks for joining
Thank
me today
you.
On the program. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Miller Program. To have that conversation with Ed Stetzer of Lifeway Christian Resources about the statistics related to the Southern Baptist Convention. The issues are, of course, bigger than any one denomination. Basically, every single evangelical church and denomination faces some kind of challenge that's very much similar in the sense of generational change and of changes in terms of our evangelistic and missionary challenge here in the United States, much less beyond. We ended by saying that the big issue really is faithfulness. I think a focus on the numbers can be very narcissistic, very inward, And not only that, it can lead us to do some things that may affect the numbers that wouldn't be faithful. The big issue is faithfulness. If we're faithful, everything else is going to fall into place. My big concern about those numbers is not relative growth or decline. I'm not disinterested in that, but that's not my big concern. My big concern is faithfulness and unfaithfulness. And you know there's no meter that responds to that. There's no barometer you can just lower into a congregation or a denomination and say, how faithful is it? It's proved over time. And the proof is in whether or not we're seeing lives transformed by the grace and by the power of God through the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And we're seeing people grow to be fully faithful, devoted followers of Christ. That's the big issue. I tell you what does reveal that, perhaps more than anything else, that's persecution. And even as we're having this discussion about how these changes and challenges represent and frame the future of the evangelical church in America, we need to recognize that there are Christians around the world who aren't having to worry about this set of challenges. They're not worried about relative statistical growth or decline. They're worried about whether or not they're going to be beaten or imprisoned or have their material goods taken away from them or their children taken away from them because they are followers of Christ. The National Post is out with an article warning that, in particular, with the Olympics coming up in Beijing, the government of China is cracking down on many Christian groups and many house churches. It looks like the Chinese government is very, very concerned to have a quiet Olympics. And there are those who are watching human rights, in particular religious freedom, who are warning that this means that there is right now a crackdown on what the government does not want seen, including many of these house churches. There are 15 million Protestants registered with the government, but there are more than 50 million Christians in unofficial house churches. Paul Marshall of the Religious Freedom in the World organization points out that there seems to be an increase in arrests of religious dissidents in the run-up to the Olympics. I think it's very important we look at this, recognizing that there were more Christian martyrs in the 20th century than in all previous centuries put together. When we talk about those who are having to put themselves on the line for the faith, it's not just here in the United States where, for instance, a young person may have to risk being socially ostracized or rejected by standing for Christ. There are people whose lives are on the line. There are people who risk being thrown into prison. It's not just the question as to whether here in the United States we have evangelical preachers who are adequately preaching the word in season and out of season. It's the recognition that there are pastors who are doing that with their lives on the line, risking arrest, beatings, separation from their families, loss of material goods, comforts, and all the rest. You know, it's humbling sometimes to realize that even when we look at the issues that are most important to us, there are issues of life and death being faced by others. That helps to put all this into perspective. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. Back tomorrow with you for the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.